This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Recovery Radio. We join you this in the middle of this holiday weekend with more information on the disease of addiction and most specifically how to deal with it, because millions and millions of people manage to regain their sobriety and live productive lives even though they have been visited by the disease of addiction. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We have a lot more about them straight ahead. I'm Steve Martorano. So if you've got some time on this weekend, and this is something that interests you, give us a listen, Recovery Radio. From Retreat's facility in Palm Beach, our guest joins us to talk about something that's almost a cliche at this point. But then again, all cliches are true. So when we hear that the addiction is the family disease, nothing could be truer. And we're going to take a very interesting look at that aspect of the disease of addiction and the dynamics that are associated, family dynamics associated when dealing with addiction. Monica Walling joins us from Retreat at Palm Beach, and we welcome her to the program. Monica, this is your first visit to Recovery Radio, right?
Yes, it is.
Well, thanks so much for taking time to join us this Saturday. Tell us a little bit about your professional background.
I've been in the field of addiction for almost 10 years, and I've been working in substance abuse for most of those years.
What attracted you to this field?
Well, I have some personal experience with my own family, with a nephew that's currently struggling with addiction, and I felt that there was a way that I might be able to help.
And you're at Retreat now, relatively new, right?
Yes, I've been here for about 5 months.
Terrific. Well, so you heard me mention the family disease. That is an absolute article of faith in this field. This is a disease. Now, most diseases, serious diseases, affect the whole family. I mean, if a family member has cancer, there's certainly a family effect. What's different about the family dynamics or the effect of the disease of addiction on a family as opposed to another disease?
Well, sometimes it's kind of relatively the same. Each person, especially when there's the disease of addiction, it affects the entire family. A lot of the families don't realize how much it affects it. Depending on the significant others, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, they're all encased in all of this addiction, and they all play very different roles in it. So as part of my philosophy is I try to educate the family about what they can or shouldn't do to kind of enable that disease. So everybody, we want to kind of identify where everybody fits within that family.
Am I wrong in the following observation? You know, while, as you said, similarities to any other disease in a family, you know, there would be an impact. But there is some interesting and significant differences with the disease of addiction, and that is the sense that while a family member who is, as I said, has cancer, for instance, there's a toll on the family. No one's going to catch cancer from them. There is a real danger, though, in this disease, the disease of addiction, dragging a whole family down into bad behavior patterns, correct?
Correct.
And I guess that's where your role as a therapist comes in, making sure people understand what that is and to avoid it.
Correct. I often tell my family members that their significant other in active addiction is very different than what I see when they come into treatment, because they're actively using, they're very self-absorbed, they're not really interested in what the family has done for them. It's more so what they can continue to do for them, you know, such as giving them money, providing different things that they want. But basically, my patients are only out for that next high. So a lot of the family members don't understand that. They're trying to save them. They feel that giving them money, continuing to do those kind of things are actually helping them, and they're really not. They're actually kind of enabling the disease to just rapidly go crazy and just continue to spiral out of control.
And the disease also takes every sort of intuitive or natural desire on the part of a family and almost turns that against them, as you mentioned, thinking you're helping when in fact you're not.
Correct.
Somebody once said, you know, one of those deep thinkers, I think, that all happy families are alike. Let's talk about unhappy families or dysfunctional families. What's the relationship between the disease of addiction and a family that is not working?
Okay. Well, a lot of the dysfunctional families, they don't realize they're dysfunctional. So a lot of education is needed to educate the family in regards to what's really going on with that person that's struggling with addiction. Sometimes there's core issues that are involved. Sometimes it's issues within the family. Sometimes there's a family history of addiction that has never really been uncovered or talked about. So we kind of have to look at all of those aspects of, you know, why are we not talking about what's going on within the family? Because it's not only the person in treatment, but it's also a lot of the dysfunction among the family, the arguing, the anger, the frustration, all of those things can happen within a family.
And that sort of dysfunction that you just described may not have anything directly to do with the disease of addiction. It just may be the dynamic of the family.
Correct. Correct.
And that has a hugely negative effect on, a negative effect on someone trying to get sober. But also, in what sense does that dysfunction set the stage for substance abuse?
Well, a lot of times, you know, as family members have their children, they have expectations for what they want their children to be or become. And a lot of times those expectations are put on the children and they can't hold up to that end, or that's not something they're interested in. So then there's a lot of blaming going on. Why haven't you done this? Why can't you do this? Then it just kind of validates the reason why, hey, I can go do this because I don't want to deal with all the pressures of life. So it just adds more stress a lot of times, which just fuels the addiction instead of really talking about the what's really going on within the family.
It sounds as though there, in the context of the disease of addiction and the family, that there's a battle over control.
Correct.
To explain that a little bit.
Right. With the battle of control, it seems like somebody within the family, it could often be the person struggling with addiction or somebody else, is trying to be the center and trying to put everything kind of in this nice little box that everything fits and everything's perfect and this is wonderful and we're all healthy. And that's really not the case at all. It's very chaotic and it's out of control. There's actually no control.
How do you get somebody, whether it's the family member affected or the substance abuser, to understand this notion that the more they try to control situations, the worse it gets, the more out of control it is? I mean, giving up control is a very scary thing, isn't it?
Correct, correct. And a lot of that control I've found to be very fear-based. So it's about that fear, that uncertainty. You know, if I don't do this, then this is going to happen. And, you know, ultimately, you can have great expectations of what you want to happen, but most of the time it doesn't happen. So then that leads to the frustration level and the more control. So the way that I try with my families is to kind of talk about, well, tell me what goes on within your family. Tell me how you feel. Have we ever, you know, looked at each individual person and what role they play within the family? It's actually very difficult to have people look at that control or that fear, but eventually as you start to educate them, they become a little bit more open and willing because a lot of them have been doing this for a very long time and nothing's changing. So often they're just willing to try something different.
We're speaking with Monica Walling. Monica is primary therapist at Retreat Palm Beach, and we're talking about the family dynamics in the context of struggling with the disease of addiction. Monica, certainly most people would understand the fear that descends upon a family when they're dysfunctional and out of control and people are abusing drugs or alcohol. But you mentioned something in your notes prior to the program that has to do with unpredictability. On the one hand, everything looks predictable. You pretty much can predict how someone abusing drugs or alcohol is going to behave. What's unpredictable?
Well, a lot of the family members, you know, they've been going through this for a while, or maybe this is the first time. It is, you're right, it is very predictable, but a lot of times they don't want to look at the behaviors. They want to pretend like things are not really happening the way that they are. And that's where the unpredictable, they're like, well, I don't understand, why does this keep happening? But then when you start to talk and educate, and they're like, oh, wait, I remember a time when this did happen. So it's really not an unpredictability if they really want to be in the here and now and really analyze the situation. So a lot of that can be eliminated, which also addresses some of the fear.
Well, let's focus on that for a moment here before we take our first break. I certainly can understand, anybody can understand family being fearful in this situation. What role does fear play in the role of the addict?
It's very fear-based. They're also very fear-based. A lot of times they don't understand that they're struggling and that really they don't. The addiction is something that takes over them and they don't have the control. So they don't really want to be doing what they're doing, but they get so far that they can't stop.
You know, fear is sort of a mental mechanism to tell us that, you know, if you're fearful of something, is sort of the message is stop doing that and maybe the fear will go away. Doesn't work that way for the addict, does it?
No. In fact, I encourage a lot of my patients to embrace that fear and show that they can go through that fear. And most of the time, it's not at all what they thought it would be. So we do a lot of that. I encourage them to go through that. What is the fear? And then go a little deeper into that. Why are you fearful? And that usually seems to bring more awareness to why they do what they do.
Our guest on the telephone, Monica Walling. Monica is with Retreat, their Palm Beach facility. She's talking about family dynamics, her specialty, as she talks to us this afternoon on Recovery Radio. We have more on this fascinating topic. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We're speaking today with Monica Walling. Monica's primary therapist at Retreat Palm Beach. We're talking about the family disease, addiction, of course, and the dynamics, how a family operates under the assault of the disease of addiction. Monica, we should probably begin at the very beginning. You deal in a family context. So when families first approach you, this is maybe their first experience with treatment, what do they expect? Do they have any expectations? Do they know what they want besides the obvious? What do you find them to be thinking when they first get into this process?
Well, my first initial phone call that I make with them, I kind of ask them that. What are their expectations? Because a lot of times here at the retreat, we do have people that have been in treatment multiple times or it's their first time. So I kind of want to set a baseline of what their expectations are and maybe what they don't know. So I kind of start out asking them what they want. Sometimes they have no idea. Sometimes the family members are completely unwilling to participate in any type of family therapy, but would, you know, be willing to speak with me, or they're totally engaged in wanting to speak with the patient in family dynamics. So I try to find out a little bit about the family history from their perspective, and I look at key points and maybe finding out, you know, if they need more education on addiction or what they don't know, and I educate them about that. And then I ask them, you know, what their expectations are for the family calls or the family sessions.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, why is it important to find out what the family wants? I mean, it should be fairly obvious. They want this problem gone. They don't want their loved one abusing drugs or alcohol. Well, why do you need to probe a little deeper about what their expectations are?
Because it kind of gives me insight into what the family members have been doing. I find out a lot about, are they the ones being the one in control? Are they the ones rescuing them? Are they the ones that got them into treatment? Like, what was the motivation for them wanting to be involved or having that person come to treatment?
Do you find that the family may become very defensive if they get it in their head that someone like you might be saying, hey, the problem may be in the family rather than the individual? Do they sort of bristle or reject that notion?
Sometimes they definitely do.
That's a hard insight to accept, isn't it?
It is, but I kind of go about it in a way of, you know, I'm great that you're supportive, but, you know, what's been happening in the past obviously hasn't been working, so let's try something new. And most of them want something new, and they're willing to look at that.
Nobody starts out to raise or create an environment in which a substance abuser, you know, will grow. So when the family is in front of you and has to come to grips with the obvious, the problem is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain to them that on the one hand, this is not their fault? On the other hand, they may have had something to do with this. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always start out with, you know, these are not a blame game session. This is kind of fine-tuning what we're missing. Like, why is this dynamic not working? It's not to say one person is 100% responsible. It's a 50-50. We look at the behaviors. We look at what they're doing and how they're feeling. And then, of course, I do bring the patient in, and we have these discussions from each person's point of view, and we try to look at that in what's healthy and what's unhealthy instead of blaming, well, you did this wrong and you did that wrong. We try to look at the outcomes and why they didn't, mm-hmm. were maybe not successful.
So, how does this work then? From let's say day one, a family mm-hmm. gets a loved one to a treatment facility like Retreat. At what point down the road does the family begin to be integrated in the treatment?
I contact them within the first 3 days that their loved one has admitted. So it gives me a chance to kind of get some collateral information to see why the patient's here. And then, of course, I'm meeting with the patient at the same time on a different time frame. And I kind of start to observe. And when I feel it's appropriate, then we bring on the family sessions. A lot of times they will come to the retreat and it will be on the premises, or we do it via telephone or Skype. So that we just kind of start that, and I work with each individual, and I'll say, what is your expectation for this? And I'll go to the patient, what is your expectation? And then this is what's going to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So most people are very open with that. Some of the parents or loved ones that have been through this a lot, it takes them a little longer because they've heard it all, they've done it all, maybe they've been in other treatment centers and it didn't work. So sometimes it doesn't happen automatically.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you work around or deal with the situation, which I'm sure you see, where people are dropping off a loved one and sort of washing their hands of this by mm-hmm. saying, well, there, we got them to rehab. Now it's up to them.
Mm-hmm. I usually talk to them a lot individually and talk about, you know, a lot of it is their own frustration. There's a lot of manipulating in substance abuse and addiction. So they don't trust. So we work about working on that. It's not uncommon for me to suggest that they even go look for individual therapy on the outside, and definitely support groups for them too. And they eventually come around.
Yeah. Well, when we come back here, I do want to take a deeper look at the whole structure of family therapy and the dynamics associated with this. But I want to pick up on what you just said. In addition to everything else the family is dealing with, there's a real threat that they have been damaged and they, in fact, need treatment themselves.
Correct.
So we'll talk about that straight ahead. You're listening to Recovery Radio. We have more. Don't go away. Hi, welcome back to Recovery Radio. We're here every Saturday. We're talking about the disease of addiction and telling you that as grim a situation as that is, and it is, as terrifying as it can be, there's a way out of this. There is treatment out there. Millions of people manage to get sober every single year. You need information. You need resources. You need your answers, your questions answered. And that's why we give you Retreat's phone number, purely as an informational tool. And again, I've told you this every week, the folks at Retreat want you to have their phone number, and they hope you never need to use it, but it could be a lifesaver. 855-859-8808. That's Retreat. premier addiction treatment centers. They are just that. They are one of the best addiction treatment facilities going today. They just great facilities, great people, cutting edge therapies. But again, they give you the phone number for any questions or comments you may have about the disease of addiction and treatment that you're in now or questions you may have down the road. So please put the number down. And again, I hope you don't have to use it. But if you do, it could make a big difference. 855-859-8808, Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. From their Palm Beach facility, primary therapist Monica Walling is joining us today to talk about the aspect of the family and the dynamics associated with the family trying to come to grips and deal with the disease of addiction. I want to get deeper into some of the areas you're going to touch upon here now, but take a moment and share with us something I'm sure you see all the time. No one ever, I to this day cannot understand how people always act stunned and surprised that this disease has visited them. I think sometimes the looking from the outside, you go, how can that be? It is true. People never see this coming, do they?
No.
What accounts for that? I mean, if I had a relative, let's use an obvious example. If I had a relative that didn't exercise, ate poorly, smoked, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody said they have heart disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is the disease of addiction so easily hidden? When you know, obviously the effects of it are so obvious.
Well, it's a way that I've found out that most of my patients, it's a way of self-soothing. So when things in life happen, which life happens, some of us have healthier coping mechanisms to deal with those struggles, and others decide to self-soothe with either, you know, medication or alcohol or any other type of mood-altering substance. So it's a way to escape.
Yes, I can see that. What about the family, though, that is blindsided by this? They never seem to see it coming. Is it that easy for the substance abuser to hide their behavior from the family until they can no longer hide it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially if there's no family history and this is something new to the family. A lot of my patients have hid it for 10 to 20 years. They're very good at hiding things, and you know, if you're not aware of what the signs and symptoms to look for, you might not ever figure it out.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's also easier to not see this situation when it's right in front of you, because of the lingering kind of negative connotation about this. Yes, it's mm-hmm. a disease, but it's on some level people. Don't you know what I mean? They it's easier to admit you have an actual disease like diabetes than it
right.
is to say my son may be an addict. Is that part of the dynamic that hides it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And our society also, I mean, if you look at our society, we encourage drinking. We encourage, I've had a lot of patients, family members say, oh, well, you know, I used recreational drugs and I was fine. You know, so they kind of minimize the long-term effects, and they sometimes think, oh, it's just because they're in their early 20s or, you know, but then when they're in their 30s and 40s, they're like, well, wait a minute, why can't they stop? So it gets a much deeper thing. So it usually takes sometimes longer unless, you know, there's been consequences. Legal consequences mm-hmm. usually is one of the ones that red flags a lot of people to go, oh, wait, this is more than just a problem.
So I'm looking through a couple of things here that you guys sent me. Let's talk about conflict. I mean, there's conflict in any family. In a situation like this, the conflict must be extraordinary. How do you deal with the family dynamic in resolving this conflict? What kinds of things do they need to know?
Well, when I talk about conflict, I really talk about opening effective communication, and I think that's something that most of the families that I've dealt with struggle with, is how to effectively communicate. And I know it sounds, well, what do you mean effectively? We all know how to effectively communicate. Within the dysfunctional families, that is a key point where people mostly struggle.
you know, I effectively communicate. You mean speak the truth for once.
Correct. Instead of, you know, when these conflicts come up, instead of kind of brushing them under the carpet or pretending like it's just a phase, it's not a big deal, you know, confronting it and getting it out there and talking about it instead of just going, he's just having a bad day or it's not that big of a deal, you know, really dealing with the issue.
Well, and in that context, how important is it for the family members to express their absolutely true feelings about this? I mean, it would seem natural that you wouldn't want to be angry, but anger is playing a role here, right? The family's angry at what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I encourage them. I mean, in my family sessions, I want them to express that anger. It's okay. I think a lot of times we talk about anger as, we shouldn't express it. All emotions should be expressed. Let's talk about them and let's effectively deal with those emotions and feelings so that we're not using them in a negative way.
Most people would find expressing their anger counterproductive or perhaps dangerous. This isn't a time to get angry. And that only makes it worse.
Absolutely. Suppressing anything just doesn't happen. It's going to come out sideways sometime, somewhere. So why not do it in the confines of a session and putting it all out there and starting to rebuild that relationship on a healthy foundation?
And as you deal with the family and are trying to get them to, you know, actually be truthful and communicate honestly, on the other side of the table, the substance abuser is potentially still playing a game of manipulation, right?
Absolutely. And that's where it's important to educate the family members about that. You know, you need to be aware of setting those boundaries and expectations and remember that person, if they're not doing the right thing, could be manipulating you and you're falling right into that. They know how to make you feel guilty. They know how to pull at your heartstrings to get what they want. And that's where it's really important to educate the family about kind of the do's and don'ts.
Sure. Talk a little bit about, we know there are many support groups for the families of people who are substance abusers, Al-Anon, and there are a couple of others.
Al-Anon,
yeah.
So, codependency is a good one.
I really want to get into that too as well. But there's also something else going on here now. In addition, I mean, this whole thing you're talking about, family dynamics and the therapy involved in that, works on a couple of levels, not least of which is to address the damage, the actual damage that's being done to the family. They're often not aware that they are collateral damage in this war, right?
Correct.
Need their own therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you? I mean, again, here they are. I'm here to help Johnny or my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying you can't do that unless you are aware of what's going on with you. Is that what you're doing?
Correct. I mean, it's often very difficult to look within yourself to see, hey, maybe I am playing a part in this. Maybe my own upbringing has brought some of this into there. Maybe it's my own insecurities. And the worst thing to do is, as the patient is here getting help and learning healthier coping skills, is to bring them back to the same environment where nothing's changed. Because they're going to fall right back into those same old behaviors because nothing has changed on the outside for them, too.
What role does the quest for the perfect play in this? You know, seeking perfection in treatment.
Well, I think perfection is not a good way to focus. And I know a lot of my family members are thinking, they've done 30 days of treatment. They're cured. They're fine. They're going to be that wonderful person that I have always wanted them to be. And those are setting way too high of expectations. They've been, some of them, using for a long time. It's going to take a little bit longer to kind of set the foundation to start figuring out who they are. Most of my patients don't even know who they are when they come into treatment. So, you know, setting certain perfectionist tendencies on them is not really going to be beneficial.
When you say they don't know who they are, you mean beyond the fact that they have been identified and perhaps even self-identify as an addict.
Correct.
They say, I am an addict, but there's a deeper understanding you're trying to get to, right?
Right. Correct. You know, a lot of them have been living their lives for other people and don't even know what they want. They don't have the goals because maybe the family members had their own expectations of what they needed them to be. So here we kind of explore, well, what do you want to do with your life? What, where are your talents and what do you want to do? And not what the family wants, what you want to do because it's your life. And so we kind of explore themselves, and most of them don't love themselves. So we work on a lot of that, too, so that they can be independent and work on themselves and be that productive member of society.
Monica Walling is our guest today. She's primary therapist, retreat at Palm Beach, talking about family dynamics. She works with family in the context of this disease. Monica, does this occur with the family and the substance abuser in the room at the same time, all the time, or how's it work?
Normally, the first time is with just myself because some of the families feel a little bit more comfortable, and then we eventually add it together, where the substance abuser will be in the room or via telephone, and we start to open up and start to try to rebuild these relationships that have been very unhealthy and sometimes damaging, and starting learning. I'm not only teaching the substance abuser how to use healthier coping skills, I'm also teaching the family members to do that too.
Family dynamics in the context of the disease of addiction. That's the topic on Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martirunner with you here on Saturdays, talking about the disease of addiction. It's all sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Again, I give you the phone number. You have any questions, have any comments, this is the number to call, 855-859-8808. They will answer your questions, 855-859-8808. From their Palm Beach facility, Monica Walling has been our guest today. We want to thank her for her time. She is a primary therapist down there. She deals primarily with the families and the dynamics involved in fighting the disease in a family context. Monica, before we get into some of these issues of codependency, which is a big issue when you're talking about families and the disease of addiction, I'm going to take just a moment and explore this idea of intervention, family intervention. I mean, there's television shows where you can watch people do this. They've turned it into entertainment. That can be a dicey proposition when the family thinks, well, let's just have an intervention and confront them. What's your experience? Have you ever been involved in an intervention?
Yes, I have. Interventions can be good and they can be bad. A lot of times, if the intervention is done right, it brings awareness to the person struggling and that maybe they're at their wit's end and they're ready to try something different, which would be the positive aspect of it. But then I've also seen it go the other way, where it continues to create more anger, more frustration, more acting out, just because it's kind of forcing someone to do something they don't really want to do.
And so if people are considering intervention, I mean, there are people who allege to be experts in intervention. You've got to be careful about them, because I'm guessing there are no experts in intervention. I guess the family has to know itself and the substance abuser before they go down that road.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's important to know, you know, what the motivation for doing this right now, you know, and where the potential patient is at.
Yeah, I have every confidence that if you were to call a retreat and just ask questions about intervention, they can give you very good advice on how to proceed. 855-859-8808. Monica, finally, in a couple of minutes that we have left here now, dealing with the family in the context of this disease, one of the really central aspects of this is getting at the core of this codependency idea. Explain codependency for people who might not know what that means.
Okay. Codependency is where usually one member in the family tends to want to kind of rescue that person. Usually it's sometimes the addict, in regards to wanting to save them, wanting to do everything for them, kind of focusing. That individual person has pretty much engulfed their entire life in this person. So they no longer have their own identity, and they're going to do everything possible to save this person, where in most of the cases, they're actually harming them. So, you know, it's, and it's also a lot of the codependency is fear-based. They want, they don't want that individual suffering. And I mean, they'll even give them money, even though they know that they're going to go out and get drugs or buy alcohol. So, and it's okay for them. And that's where the dysfunction, and they're not really helping the situation. Mm-hmm. They're not setting strong boundaries, and they're just, they want to fix it. They're fixers.
Yeah, this codependency idea must work on a very kind of deep psychological basis. If I understand codependency in one sense, the person who's trying to save the substance abuser now defines themselves as savior. And the idea that if the addict got better, then who am I?
Absolutely.
Is operating on a very deep level, right? Because nobody mm-hmm. would do that. No one would do that on purpose, would they?
I would hope not.
No, of course not. So how do you, I mean, that's a tough one to get to, right?
Right. And then once that awareness is brought, especially in a family session, and actually I'm working on someone right now that's coming to that revelation on their own, is now their own identity is now, what do they do? Because as that addict gets healthier, they no longer have a role. So then often the codependency, they'll continue to shift that to continue to keep them sick. So that it's a very sticky situation that you really have to work on those healthy boundaries, because it's going to really hurt that individual as they start to get healthier and want to live in sober.
And I guess finally, with regard to the entire issue, but certainly with regard to codependency, what role does enabling play in this? I mean, enabling and codependency may often go together, but they're not the same thing, right?
Correct, correct. I mean, enabling, I see a lot where they will just do everything that they're doing, everything they're living in. I've had family members that have spent thousands of dollars on either keeping their individual out of having legal issues or getting their jobs or things like that. So they're still controlling and trying to get everything. They're working much harder than the addict. And that's where the imbalance is, because the addict will just continue to allow them to do that, and nobody's getting better.
That's an interesting idea, that the enabler is working harder than the substance abuser.
Mm-hmm.
But you see it all the time, correct?
All the time. And I often use the, you know, with some of my parents there or loved ones that are a little harder to see this, I'll go, well, if I had somebody paying my way and paying my bills and doing everything for me, would I come to work? Probably not. And then they'll go, oh, I didn't think about it like that. So, you know, they have to learn to create their own independence and start to live their own life and do what they need to do instead of having someone else do it for them.
Sure, it's perfectly obvious. If you absolutely are certain that there's someone running around behind you to catch you if you stumble, then you're not going to pay a lot of attention to whether you stumble or not.
Correct, correct.
Monica Walling, thanks so much for your insight in this and your time. We appreciate it. We hope we'll have you back on the show real soon.
Thank you.
Take care. Monica Walling from Retreat at Palm Beach. Thank you all for listening. We have another edition of Recovery Radio next Saturday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.